Safety, Policy, and Finance. Today, January 8, 2004. Before we start, I just want to inform the committee, as you probably may know, it's with deep sadness that I have to inform you that Peter Meslow, Representative Doug Meslow's son, passed away this morning. Arrangements are still pending, and out of respect for Representative Meslow, who is a member of this committee, I'd ask that there be plenty of respect given to him, the commitment that the representative has to his family at this time, specifically and especially with regard to any requests for his time here at this building or any appointments for the next few days. Thank you. Clerk, would you take the roll, please?
Chairman Smith?
Here.
Representative Eastland? Cornish?
Here.
Ellison? Hillstrom?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Meslow? Murphy?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Newman?
Here.
Kamar?
Here.
Soderstrom?
Here.
There is a quorum, so the first thing we'll look at are the minutes of the meeting from February 3, 2004, and those are in your packet. Representative Johnson moves approval of those minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have three items on the agenda for presentation this morning, and that's overview of the governor's budget recommendation. First for the Department of Public Safety, followed then by the Board of Peace Officer Standard and Training, followed thereafter by the Board of Public Defense. So we will look at equally one-third of our remaining time would be roughly 30 minutes. So I'd ask the presenters to not exceed that, and we'll see where we go with questioning. Therefore, having said that, Commissioner, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you again. My goal here is to talk very briefly, Mr. Chair and members, about a couple of achievements in the Department of Public Safety in the past year, and Mary Ellison will get into the details of the governor's initiatives. There's a number of things that have happened in public safety that have been good here in the past year. I'm just going to highlight a couple of them. Last year, the State Fire Marshal's Office providing leadership and support with other fire prevention efforts realized the lowest per capita fire death in the state of Minnesota ever. 39 people died of result of fires, which is the lowest we've had in, I think, in all times. The Office of Justice Programs began a web-enabled grant operations process with which they are now providing web access to grant application and grant reporting. More than 400 grant contracts, 100 grant amendments, processing over $19 million in payments was achieved this past year. Homeland Security and Emergency Management, some 150 plus different exercises took place last year involving the federal government and local units of government and in some instances private entities. For example, Homeland Security and Emergency Management, in cooperation with the Office of Domestic Preparedness, the Province of Ontario, Canada, and the Grand Portage Tribal Nation, conducted a tabletop exercise up by Grand Portage in northern Minnesota, which was, I think, the first of its kind in the state. Last year, also, we had a full-scale nuclear preparedness exercise in June at Prairie Island, the nuclear generating plant, which was observed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is required by law. Lastly, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension was awarded a mitochondrial DNA grant by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which will enable the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Forensic Science Laboratory to start conducting mitochondrial DNA analysis. There were only four states in the United States that were awarded this grant on a very competitive basis. Connecticut, New Jersey, and Arizona were the other states. It's really quite a tribute, I think, to those the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and its forensic science reputation that the FBI awarded them this grant. The DNA offender database also continues to grow, and it becomes more effective as time goes on. All felonies, any individuals arrested for are convicted of a felony must submit a DNA sample to the combined data index system, which CODIS, which is at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, is connected to the FBI's National DNA Index System. A number of years ago, we probably at the BCA received maybe 10 hits in the course of a year, solving unsolved homicides, sexual assaults, robberies, and other kinds of cases. There were over 100 cases that were matched with this DNA database last year, and instead of 10 in the course of a year, the BCA is realizing about 10 a month of solved cases. So with that, I would ask Mary Ellison to go over the details of the governor's budget, and we'll be available for any questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. What I plan to do this morning is to just walk through the different budget change item recommendations that the governor has presented. I've distributed a handout that has the Department of Public Safety at the top and some budget numbers. What I attempted to do here was to condense some of the material that is in your budget books. But if you want to reference your budget books, there is more detail on each one of these budget change items beginning on page 7. And I noticed about 9:30 this morning that I should have arranged my handout in the same sequence as the information in your budget books, and I didn't do that and didn't have time to change it all around and make new copies. And so I will point out the page number that each one of these change items refers to, because there is more detail in each one of those budget documents. Just by way of background, the 2004-2005 criminal justice portion of the public safety budget was $482,997,000, and that includes all state funds, federal funds, and special revenue funds. The 2006-2007 criminal justice budget is proposed at $449,768,000. Again, that's state, federal, special revenue. And if you look at that total, it differs a little bit from the cover letter that is attached to your budget, because the cover letter includes all public safety funding, including that funding that's heard in the transportation side of the budget. The budget reflects a reduction primarily in federal disaster assistance grants. Those grants change really year to year based on the number of disasters that we have in the state of Minnesota. Further, although not reflected in the budget because the budget documents were put together before we were notified of these changes, but I just want to bring to the attention of the committee that the Department of Public Safety will be receiving, and the state of Minnesota will be receiving a significant reduction in the coming year in the area of Homeland Security funding. That funding is scheduled to go from a current appropriation of $60 million down to $34 million. Also, the Burn Formula grant funding that we have received through the Federal Department of Justice this year is going from a total of $8.5 million down to $5.1 million, so about a 41% reduction next year in Burn Formula grant funds. The 2004-2005 state general fund budget for criminal justice was $139,676,000, and the governor is proposing a general fund criminal justice budget for the coming biennium 2006-2007 of $155,210,000, or an 11% increase. Again, I'm going to highlight the budget change items and refer them to you also for additional information to your budget books. All of this information is again in pages 7 to 24 in your budget documents. The first one I want to point out is a request for a replacement of our automated fingerprint identification system. We're asking for $1.533 million for 06 and $2.318 million for 07. This material is located on page 10 specifically, a lot more background material than I have put in my quick reference handout. The automated fingerprint information system has been operating 24/7 for a number of years, for about 12 years to be more specific, and the vendor has notified us that after 2006 they will no longer be servicing the automated fingerprint information system. There will no longer be replacement parts This system, of course, is the cornerstone for the criminal justice system in Minnesota, and so it's really a very high priority for us to replace this system. We are planning on using Homeland Security dollars to supplement what we're asking for from the state, and the new system will also be able to have new technologies associated with it. We will be able to take palm prints, which is a significant enhancement. And we anticipate that it's going to reduce the time to minutes instead of hours to facilitate booking and identification processes statewide.
Excuse me, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ellison, are they just going out of business, that vendor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, no, they are not going out of business, but they are no longer servicing this particular brand of the, or this, what would you call it, this particular version of the automated fingerprint identification system.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. So we're replacing these items to the new version that then they will service, or we are purchasing things that we know they're not going to service in the long term, and then what is the long-term plan for replacing that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the request that we are asking is to totally replace the system with a new system.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, and then Ms. Ellison, do we have a guarantee of how long or how many years the new system will be taken care of? Or do they just change every few years, or do they get us and then say this is working fine, but now you have to go to be more modern? Or what's the deal? Do we have any guarantees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, so these are some of the same concerns that we had when we were notified of this change. I would ask somebody from the BCA to come down and answer those more specific questions.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I think the short answer is that with any technology, there's a shelf life. And by the time fall of 2006, it'll be almost 14, maybe closer to 15 years. I don't think the anticipated shelf life was ever anticipated to be much more than that. I'll let the superintendent get it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, my name is Linda Finney. I'm the superintendent of the BCA. Regarding the replacement of the AFIS system, I think that we are almost caught in the situation related to technology. It turns over very similar to what the superintendent said. The shelf life, we can anticipate that it will probably be as long as the old system, which is about 14 years or so. But over time, as you know, with technology, it changes very rapidly. And so there's no guarantee that the new system we have will be there for perpetuity. It will need to be replaced at some time. One of the things that we do in identifying the system is to try to identify those vendors that can give us, if you would, the best deal. But sometimes we are caught because this is such a unique type of technology. So our hope is that once it is replaced, it will be in place for at least a decade. But there will come a time when, just because of the nature of technology, when we will have to replace that. In talking with the vendors, no one can really say that we have, say, 10 years, 25 years. As technology evolves and new things emerge, very often we're caught with the vendors who they move with the, I guess, the market trend. And we find ourselves, when they bring the new version out, they discontinue service on the old vendor. I think that we've all, in our personal lives, have been caught into that. And unfortunately, as a state agency, we tend to do that as well. But we look for the best deal related to that vendor that can provide us the best service contract, if you would. And that's what we're asking for here. Again, the shelf life of it, I would anticipate that it would be at least a decade. But again, I don't know if we can get a definitive answer from them simply because of how the technology evolves over time.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Superintendent Finney, I appreciate that answer, and I was here 14 years ago, you know. Is this the same vendor that we're talking about?
I believe that it is. I think we're dealing with the Unisys company, and I believe that that is the same vendor that we will be working with. Well, he will say that it will be the same vendor that we will be considering. I can check on that and get a more definitive answer, but I believe it is still Unisys is one of the top vendors that we're looking at regarding that. A lot of times it comes down to certain technology may be copyrighted, and you get called with a vendor that has the copyright to a unique kind of system that is considered the state of the art for the industry, and that may be what we're facing with, but I can get a more definitive answer for you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Superintendent Finney, Commissioner Campion, I really, Superintendent used the word hope, and I expect it'll last at least a decade, maybe longer, maybe not. But I think that we should get some more comfortable language and like what they'll do for us if they don't go 10 years. No, I think 10 years is okay to deal with, but so they don't come in and just some other language that would be more comforting to the legislature that we're not putting money out the window just for new techniques that are going to come in 2, 4, 6, 8 years or whatever.
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think we certainly understand your concern, and as Mary Ellison said, it certainly was our concern. We would have to go through an RFP process. I suspect there's only 2 or 3 vendors out there that even provide this technology. Through that process, we will leverage as much as we can to ensure that this technology will be state-of-the-art and will last as long as possible. Best answer I can give you, sitting here today.
Representative Nelson.
Representative Murphy basically asked the same question I had.
All right. Go ahead, Ms. Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item on the agenda is the details are on page 18 of your budget book. It's replacement of live scans, and this is integrally related to the automated fingerprint information system. The live scans are the units which electronically feed fingerprint information into the automated fingerprint information system. We are asking for $66,000 for 2006 and $69,000 for 2007. The live scans have a shelf life of about 5 years, and we knew that when we purchased them. This is an ongoing process where we are going to need periodically to be replacing live scan equipment in the state of Minnesota. Currently, we have 167 live scan units deployed. We're anticipating by the end of 2007 we'll have 195 live scan units deployed. The live scans have improved significantly the issuance of fingerprints from local booking agencies to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which, of course, is really important in terms of identification and solving crimes. We are, again, using some federal terrorism dollars to supplement what we are asking for from the state general fund for this category of expenditure.
How much is that?
We're asking for $66,000 for 06 and $69,000 for 07. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next item on the handout is the predatory offender registration improvement. This is actually a holdover from the last legislative session. This is to close loopholes in the predatory offender law and predatory offender registration, particularly related to homeless registrants. And we are asking for $1.146 million for 06 and $564,000 for 2007.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I just wanted to go back just briefly, if we could, to the automated fingerprint system. I just realized I had a question. It is anticipated that $5 million will come from federal terrorism grants. And I just wanted to ask the question, how certain are we that we're going to get them, and what happens if we don't?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, we are certain of the particular amount that we have in this budget. We have gotten our allocation for the coming year, and that's what we're looking at in terms of purchase of the live scan.
Okay.
Move on. The next item on the agenda is the Criminal Justice Information System Audit Trail. The more details of that are located on page 14 of your budget books. Basically, currently there's no single point to for a person to audit the information that's contained on them within the criminal justice system. So we're asking for $347,000 for 06 and $203,000 for 07 to create an audit trail system at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So a person could go to one place and find out what information is contained on them within the criminal justice system. The next item is the DNA felony database, and that more detail about that is located on page 16. The governor is requesting $659,000 for fiscal year 06 and $670,000 for fiscal year 07. Commissioner Campion referenced this in his introductory remarks. The analysis of felony offenders has resulted in some significant cases being solved that we weren't able to solve before. The felony, all felon law is due to sunset on 6/30/05, and we are asking that in a policy-related matter that that sunset be lifted and that we be able to continue to gather this DNA. And we, because of the success that we've had recently, based on a rate of about 10 hits per 1,000 samples, we anticipate that we would be able to solve an additional approximately 200 cases per year by maintaining this particular database.
Sorry, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Ellison, in the word from the department in the budget book, we talked about the biological sample kits, and before we bought the sample kits, but we didn't do the analysis, and now are you asking for the analysis without the sample kits, or are we going to do both the sample kits and the analysis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that issue was actually brought to our attention late last week. Apparently, the budget for the sample kits is in the Department of Corrections budget, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Not correct. Mr. Ahrens, would you like to come up to the table, and can you shed any light on this?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Ahrens to address that question.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Frank Ahrens, Finance Director for the Department of Public Safety. We did have a one-time appropriation for the current biennium of $150,000 each year, and that was for the sample kits. We do not have that as part of our base for the budget for 06-07. And in this budget request, not only are we asking for the scientists to do the analysis, but also for the sample kits. So we will have the kits to send out to Department of Corrections.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahrens.
Representative Murphy, something further?
But Mr. Chair, Mr. Ahrens, Commissioner,
where does it say that that's going to be in the dialogue
on page 16?
Wasn't that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, as I read page 16, it just says that you're asking for funding for the analysis, and it doesn't ask for the funding for the kit. And I'm wondering, how can we do the analysis if we don't have the kit?
Mr. Chairman,
who's paying for that?
Okay. Mr. Ahrens.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, included in those dollars are our money for the kits, and I can give you specific numbers on that if you would like.
So it's tips and analysis.
Correct. That is correct.
Sure, I'd like to know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have included in this budget request $390,000 each year for DNA probes and collection kits. So out of the $659,000, $370,000, $390,000 of that is for collection kits and the DNA probes.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Aaron Stout, under the relationship to base budget, then the last sentence of the first paragraph says there is no base funding in FY 2006-2007 budget activity. Is that correct?
Madam, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct, and that's what I stated before, was we did have a one-time appropriation of $150,000 each year. That's in our current biennium, but that is not part of the base for 06-07. So that's why when we included in this budget request not only the forensic scientists to do the analysis, but also continued funding for the collection kits and the kits that are needed by the forensic scientists to do the analysis.
And so that's part of the $659,000.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? If not, go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Ahrens.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next item on this handout is the crime victim assistance funding. Again, this is a repeat from last year. The detail is on page 22 of the budget book. Last year, as you know, we had a lot of discussion about the reduction that has occurred since 2001 in the area of crime victim assistance grants. The governor is requesting $532,000 for 06 and $532,000 for 07 to partially restore funding to those judicial districts that received the greatest reduction in dollars for crime victim assistance grants.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the battered women's shelters part of this, or are they on a different page?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the battered women's shelters are not part of this particular grant item. They have a separate appropriation.
Okay, and so we'll talk about that a little later.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the governor is recommending continuation of the base funding, and so we can certainly talk about that at any point in time, but I'm just highlighting here change items.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. A follow-up. I just wanted to bring that up because I'm very concerned, because it's my understanding that some of the outstate shelters may be at risk of closing given the financial impact the cuts have had. And so I just hope that we'll talk about it at some point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I'd be glad to come back any time and talk about that particular issue.
Thank
you. The next item.
Excuse me, Representative Eastland.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just give us a little outline of who the crime victims are that are going to get the assistance here? I mean, what groups and who are they? Who's that money going to be targeted at?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, certainly. We have a number of different grant assistance programs located throughout the state, and they serve victims of domestic violence but again, outside of a shelter, not necessarily shelter services. These are non-shelter services for battered women, services for sexual assault victims, services for abused children, and services for victims of families of homicide victims, felony assaults, and other sorts of serious crimes. Last year, they collectively served about 166,000 people throughout the state of Minnesota. There's about $5.1 million in the base budget for that activity. At one point, the base budget was over $9 million, and so that funding has been reduced over the years. So we're asking for a restoration of $532,000 a year. Last year, we talked significantly about the funding for programs statewide. We implemented, because of the reductions in state funding, and because we supplement our state funding with federal funding, we implemented a formula program and distributed grants to different parts of the state based on judicial districts, based on population and crime, reported crime, and likelihood of getting foundation funding for the programs, a number of different characteristics, and allocated the funding based on that formula. There were some areas of the state that received more cuts than other areas of the state. At the end of the session last year, the House had in their budget the restoration of $532,000 for the purpose of bringing the judicial districts that received the most amount of cuts back up so that no one district received more than a 12% cut. And so this recommendation is consistent with where we were at the end of the last legislative session.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a question for Gary Carter. I'm not certain who would be able to answer this question, but in the event that a crime victim sued the state saying that we had a role in what happened to them, would the money that they won come out of this budget, or would that come out of somewhere else?
Claim against the state.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I do not believe it would come out of this budget. It would be, like as the Chair said, it would be a claim against the state, and it would have to come out of another budget.
All right, thanks.
Allison, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item on the agenda is a request for the Criminal Gang Strike Force. Again, this was a proposal that we discussed at length last year. It's a request for $2.650 million for 06 and $2.650 million for 07. This initiative seeks to better coordinate the activities of the Criminal Gang Strike Force and the 22 narcotics task forces that are funded through federal funds that are located around the state. The proposal continues the Metro Gang Strike Force as it currently exists, creates a database to allow sharing of gang and illegal drug activity investigative data, and requires the development of a statewide strategy to combat both illegal drugs and gangs.
Ms. Ellison, just as a reminder, quickly, remind us again how the spending and the deficiency bill that we've just addressed will affect the Gang Strike Force.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the request in the deficiency bill was to continue current operations of the Gang Strike Force through June 30th, so through the end of the fiscal year, allowing time for the Gang Strike Force to continue while this proposal is being deliberated in the legislative branch.
Okay, thank you.
The next item on the agenda is related to fire inspections and lodging facilities. The governor is recommending an amendment to Minnesota Statute 299F.46 to require the inspection of some additional lodging facilities, such as resorts, dormitories, bed and breakfasts, youth family camps, and juvenile group homes and migrant worker camps. Along with that, we're requesting an elimination of the exemption that was provided for hotels with fewer than 35 rooms and resorts classified as 1C. You may remember that discussion from a couple of years ago. There was a change made in the fire marshal's budget to allow them to charge a fee for service to replace some of the funding that had traditionally been forthcoming through the legislature, through the general fund budget. The fee that was created exempted certain small hotels and lodging facilities, and the amount of money that was collected was not, we were not able to estimate at the time what sort of impact that would have on the collection of fees. It's had a pretty significant impact, and so we're asking for these items that we anticipate will generate about $240,000 for 06 and another $240,000 for 07 to allow the inspection of the facilities that I've just previously listed.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the fee that we had in law for the inspections that did take place, and how much is this fee by comparison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, this fee is half of what we charge for a larger facility. I believe the fire marshal there, Mr. Rosendahl, could you come forward? I think, as I said, it's half, but let me ask Mr. Rosendahl to explain further.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jerry Rosendahl, State Fire Marshal, the fee for the so-called larger hotels, there's a base fee of $435, and then there's a per-room charge that's added on after that. This, for the smaller ones, is exactly as Commissioner Ellison said, one-half of that. The original revenue reduction in 2003 was $750,000 out of the general fund budget to be replaced by the fees. However, the fees after the exemption was placed on brought in $185,000 instead of the $750,000.
Representative Eastland.
So if the fee is one half and it's $435 plus a room charge, does that mean that it is then $217.50 plus the same room charge? Is the room charge a half too, or so it's one half per room plus the and is that going to bring in the amount of revenue that is required under this on what you lost,
Mr. Rosendahl?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, the $240,000 obviously does not replace the entire $565,000 that was missing, if you will, in terms of the fees last time. But what we've done here is we've adjusted the facilities. We've got a better handle now through a database on the numbers of hotels and resorts in the state, and we feel this is the priority that we want to go after in terms of kind of transient lodging in the state. And the fee is exactly, all the way down the line, half the room charge, half of the follow-up fee inspection charge, as what the larger ones currently have.
Chair,
Representative Eastland.
I guess my concern is for a lot of seasonal places, for places with a small number of rooms, it still seems like there's inequity here, and I guess you know, if we're placing a mandate on them that they need to be this is probably a question we shouldn't be talking about today, but I guess I just question whether or not we should be moving ahead with placing those fees back on. I think there's a reason we didn't put them on, and I think it was to protect some of the smaller bed and breakfast lodges, you know, summer resort motels and that sort of things that have limited cash flow. And is there some other way we could assess this fee so that there would be some fair way to do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, I think the fee of $235 plus the rooms equates to, this is a triannual inspection, so this is an $80 to $100 fee per year, if you look at it that way. The other side of this is these facilities are not inspected now, because we're unable to do it, and typically the locals you know, have varying degrees of ability to pick that up, so those facilities just are not getting inspected now.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Rosendahl, could you tell us again how much is that per room fee?
Mr. Rosendahl.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I don't have, I'm not sure they have the statute.
It's
the half cost breaks down to about $3 a room, in addition to the $217.50 for the base. I'd be more than happy to give you the more detailed breakdown. Right. Right, for the bigger ones. Right.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item on the agenda is methamphetamine enforcement and awareness. That's located on page 20 of your budget book. The governor is recommending $1,040,000 for 06 and $1,000,000 for 07. The main item under this request is to hire 10 BCA agents to be devoted to methamphetamine investigations in the rural areas of Minnesota. This past fall, Commissioner Campion and I and some other staff visited 9 different locations within the state and talked to all kinds of different stakeholders that are involved with public safety in one way, shape, form, or another. And without exception, people asked for assistance with the methamphetamine problem that is particularly plaguing rural Minnesota. The $40,000 in the first year is for a methamphetamine awareness program that will be used to educate retailers about methamphetamine.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ellison, will those 10 new agents be statewide rural, or will they be home-based in Bemidji?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll let Commissioner Campion answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, there will be two offices, new offices open, one in Alexandria, Minnesota, one in Grand Rapids, and the rest will be outside of the metropolitan area. It's up to the superintendent to decide where those people will be deployed, but our agreement and our in, conversation with the governor is that they would all be outside the seven-county metropolitan area.
And Representative Murphy, how many people does Grand Rapids get and how many does Alexandria get, or don't we know that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, two each.
Two.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the next item on the agenda is... The detail is on page 24. It's the transfer of the Youth Intervention Program from the Department of Employment and Economic Development to the Department of Public Safety. This program has been in operation since 1978. There are 52 programs statewide. They each receive $26,000 a year. These programs are consistent with other programs that are administered through the Office of Justice Programs within the Department of Public Safety. The next item
Ms. Ellison, can you tell me why the governor is recommending this transfer? If you know.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the commissioner has reminded me that we believe it's been a request from the Department of Employment and Economic Development to transfer this program, and they felt that it was consistent with some other programs that we operate. This is the best answer that I can give you at this point.
I just remember that we had a program that we felt like hell to keep within our purview, and it went away, and with some strings attached, and now we're getting another one, so be it. I was just curious.
Mr. Chair.
Strike the word hell, excuse me. Representative Murphy.
When I saw that, I wondered if it was transferred because so many of our prevention programs have been non-funded, and so it was transferred so that we would non-fund it. And I would hate to have that happen, but... No, we really used to have a really healthy prevention program as part of our purview in this committee, and we don't have any anymore, and it looked to me like they were considering sending it to CAP. But that was just a
decision
I was making.
This transfer involves nearly $3 million. We'll probably get some additional testimony on this after today, to refresh our memories as to the YIP program. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, as a committee, I would hope that no one would ever consider a transfer to the Department of Public Safety as a death sentence. But we'd be happy to come back and talk about this in greater detail. The next item on the agenda, the details are on page 17. That's the fee for Internet criminal history. Currently, we are able to provide access to computerized criminal history information through the internet at the BCA. A current law allows us to charge $5 for access to those records. We would like to have that fee be continued to operate this program. People are still allowed to go into the BCA and obtain the information at no cost. However, this allows people to access that information over the internet. The next item is the details are on page 8 of your budget. It is a request for an increase of 25 cents in the statutory cap of the 911 fee from 40 cents per month on each customer line to 65 cents. The revenue increases would go to pay off prior year obligations to the telephone companies and to pay the state's cost in building the statewide trunked a public radio safety system.
And then there's a rollback at when of how much of that increase?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear that.
There
question.
Is a rollback of
yes.
Of how much and when will that rollback occur?
Yes, Mr. Chair. After the prior year obligations are paid, which total about $8.2 million, the fee would be reduced by 15 cents. We anticipate that would occur after 1 year.
Someone have a question? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had asked this question before, but I think now is the more appropriate time to ask it. Explain to me how this the situation with cable telephones now and the cellular phones, how that works with the fee and what we are able to charge and what we're not and what the reimbursement for phone companies. Could you explain how that all works?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I do not in any way pretend to be an expert in this area. If Mr. Whitehead is in the room or someone who's in the room that has more details, that would be great. My understanding of the recent decision related to voice over IP is that the Federal Communications Commission has determined that states are not allowed to regulate voice over IP systems. It is anticipated because of the change in that technology, a lot of phone systems will be going to voice over IP, which means that we would have a limited window with which to potentially collect the 911 fee on traditional and cellular telephone lines. So we have a certain window with which we can know that we could collect the fee before that new voice over IP system would become a more popular option. With that, I'll let Assistant Commissioner Leslie say anything further that he thinks might be relevant.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you did a great job. Voice over IP is where you get your phone service through the internet, and the FCC has ruled that it cannot be regulated, so therefore no 911 fee can be associated to it or assigned to it. So at the Senate hearing about our budget, Mr. Jerry Knickerbocker from the Minnesota Telecom Alliance testified, and he spoke for the phone companies that this emerging technology is going to happen, and he expects the evolution to occur very rapidly, and it's a business case for them to save money and be competitive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then a follow-up to that is I'm getting marketed all the time from the cable company to change my phone over. So in the event lots of people are doing that, then how are you going to fund this? I mean, what's the vision?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are looking very thoroughly, and we're looking across the nation at what other states have done to fund their statewide radio systems. And Mr. Whitehead, who's the project manager for the 911 and the Armor program, has a committee established, and we are working with the Metro and Radio Board with them to determine how best to fund in the future. And we're still working on that. And I think what we're planning to do is, if it's your desire, is that we would kind of get rid of this $8.2 million problem and then come back to the next session and report back as to what we found.
Okay, Ms. Ellison, move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The final items are budget reductions that the governor has proposed, totaling $2.309 million for both 06 and 07. The first one is in the area of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Currently, we have two 24-hour emergency call centers located in the Department of Public Safety, one attached to the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and one with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. This proposal combines these two operations into one. The second item is a change in the CRIMNET budget of $1.5 million per year. There was a technical base adjustment that was due to come to for the CRIMNET budget of $1.5 million per year for the 06 and 07 biennium. This removes that base adjustment, and they continue to have the base level of funding that they've had for this past biennium. The last item is a reduction in the suspense file, $500,000 per year for 06 and 07. The suspense file reduction project was originally funded by the 2001 legislative session with an understanding that the duration of the project would be for 4 years. That four-year period has expired. There does continue to be some level of funding in the base budget for that activity.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was another question I asked at a different hearing. Does that then mean that we have a different priority now, or does it mean that we have fixed the problem so that not as many files are coming into suspense?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, we have made some significant progress in reducing the suspense file. It is not completely eliminated. However, the request that we have for the automated fingerprint information and the live scan, particularly the live scan device, will assist in maintaining some level of reduction in the suspense files. We've also changed some business practices pretty significantly in the area of suspense files that have impacted that over the last 4 years. We're also doing a significant amount of training with local booking sheriffs and booking facilities to train them as to how to adequately do the live scans and get the fingerprint information in. We've also changed the procedure in that The courts do now have access to the information that is within the suspense files. So this is somewhat of a complicated discussion, and if you'd like, we'd be happy to bring people back. I know the Senate has an interest in this area, and we're doing a special one-hour hearing for them, particularly on the suspense file, the different parts of the suspense file, the changes in the business practices, and how those have impacted cases that go into suspense.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would at least like to know where we were and how many was coming in and how many stayed in suspense and where we are now, and has that number dropped, how much, that kind of thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, if somebody would like to address that quickly now, that would be great. And if you want more detail, we'd be happy to come back.
Mr. Chair, committee, representative, regarding suspense, I think when suspense started, there was about 449,000 in suspense. We have met all of the goals that was outlined during the time that it was established over the four-year period. Suspense is down now about 77,000. One of the issues with suspense is an ongoing and continuous problem. I think over the 4 years, they discovered that a lot of things that they did not know about it at the beginning, working with both courts and with the various police departments. A lot of it is trigger issues. A lot of it has been business practices. But the simple answer to your question is it has gone down significantly. From the 449,000 to 77, and we continue to work on that. As Commissioner Ellison said, it's a fairly complex issue, and we are certainly willing to come back and or provide you with some of the handouts that we will be using for that to that will explain further to you precise numbers and so forth, so you can see where we were, where we are now, and what we are continuing to do in this issue.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that we don't end up back in the 449,000 range simply because we, cut $500,000 now and we find out it costs us much more later.
Very good. Anything further? Any additional questions? Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to go back to the gang strike force. Mr. Campion is... If I read the budget correctly, so is the merger of the gang and drug strike force over, or is that discussion over with this funding appropriation? Or are we still engaged in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, I believe that we have come up with policy language separate and apart from the funding that will is satisfactory to all the individuals involved in both the gang activity and the narcotics enforcement activity statewide. That's my belief. So that we have come to some policy language that is satisfactory to everyone concerned and meets the goals of what the governor had in mind a year ago and is the most efficient and effective means of resources and deployment of individuals.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a separate item, I brought this to the chair's attention over the interim, and we never really went anywhere with it. But I would like at some time, Mr. Campion, either for you to come see me or provide me, I think would be better. I'd like to know what the policies are for employees using state cars and which employees are allowed to take state cars home with them. I'd also like to know what for all of the divisions that you have authority over, what the policy is on overtime and how people use overtime within those individual divisions. Is that something you could get me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar would be more happy to.
Thank you.
Why don't you supply that to copy committee staff as well, and we'll disseminate it to the balance of the committee.
Be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you again for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to CrimNet, can you tell me this base cut, I believe that it is, what impact will that have? Are these local grants? How do you envision this impacting the CrimNet project?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it will not change the priorities of CRIMNET. It will not delay CRIMNET in achieving the integration plans that it's had for the next year and so forth, with trying to work off of its strategic plan. It may delay some things a little bit. There is certainly federal money that is that may be available that we have not been able to secure yet, but we have in the past, for instance, to replace some of that money. As someone who attends the policy group meetings and the task force meetings with regularity, I think that the funding is not impeding, or the lack of funding is not impeding the progress of CRIMNET. I think that the collaboration amongst the local folks that are involved in CRIMNET and the CRIMNET office and really some of the business practice changes are really very significant, and I think we'll jumpstart and move forward CRIMNET the next several months up to a year. I think we have one of the task force chairs here, and Mr. Sikora, who certainly can speak his own mind, but that would be my perspective on things. If Mr. Sikora could further answer that, I would offer him as someone who can give you some additional information.
Mr. Chair and members, Robert Sikora. I'm the Chief Information Officer at the Board of Public Defense, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the task force. I'm also a member of the policy group. In response to the pitch that I just got from Commissioner Campion, I can't respond specifically as to which dollar amounts being changed affect which programs. I can tell you that the task force is very heavily engaged in the process of determining grants that are necessary to keep things going at the local level. We have a very engaged group of people that are monthly asking all the questions that I'm comfortable seeing asked. We have a meeting this Friday if you'd like to attend and get a sample of the sort of engaged local level participation in CRIMNET development.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner, as always. We're going to move on then to the Post Board. Ask you to come on up. Mr. Melton, previous testifiers ate into your time. You now have 6 minutes.
Mr. Chair, members
take
of the committee,
as much as you need.
I can, and I will be brief. For the record, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. During my allotted time, now that's shorter, I'm going to do two things. I want to talk about the overview of the Post Board briefly and the impact of the Governor's recommendations for 06 and 07. You should have in your possession a blue handout, two-sided. I will be referring to that in a moment. But first of all, I want to talk a little bit about the Post Board, because despite our best efforts, many people in the state still don't understand who we are or what we do. So a summary of the Post Board is simply, the mission of the board is to develop, maintain, and enforce selection, education, and licensing standards. We were established by legislation in 1978. We were the first in the nation to do so. And the purpose of the board is to regulate and enhance the profession of law enforcement in Minnesota. Just a couple of the core functions of the board. We administer licensing exams. We license peace officers and part-time peace officers. We manage a training reimbursement fund for local units of government. We monitor compliance with the standards of conduct. We establish and maintain pre-service education curriculum at 21 colleges and universities. We examine compliance of continuing education requirements, and we perform other services as mandated by the legislature. If I can go to the blue handout on a page that's headed Minnesota Law Enforcement Statistics, I'd like to start with that first as an overview of the board. Currently, there are 488 state, county, and local agencies in Minnesota. As evidenced by the numbers, there are 380 municipal police departments. They range in size from one officer to nearly 800. There are 87 sheriffs. There are six state agencies. Those are unique. We've got the fraud unit at the Commerce Department. They're hiring officers now. having passed legislation in the last 2 years. Corrections has a fugitive unit, DPS has a gambling and alcohol, the BCA, DNR, as well as the State Patrol. Then we have 9 non-municipal police departments. These are rather unknown. Anoka Parks, the University of Minnesota, has 3 different agencies. Three Rivers Park, which used to be the larger Hennepin Parks. Minneapolis Parks, State Fair, the MAC, the Airports Commission, as well as Metro Transit. And we have 6 tribal law enforcement agencies in Minnesota. As you can see, Prairie Island, Lower Sioux, Fond du Lac, Leech Lake, White Earth, Mille Lacs. And POST regulates, monitors, and serves as a resource to all of them. As stated, we have 488 agencies. Nearly half of these agencies have 7 or fewer officers. And that's important because 7 is the number considered the minimum to be able to provide 24/7 law enforcement coverage for their community or jurisdiction. So nearly half have 7 or fewer. Other facts of interest, we currently have 9,485 active peace officers, 316 part-time officers, and a few inactive officers. Those can either be in transition between agency to agency or have recently retired. Education level is always a question I get asked. Roughly 94% of the officers in Minnesota have college degrees, either 2-year, 4-year, or postgraduate degrees. Now, where are these officers? 60% are in the 9-county metro area, 40% in greater Minnesota. And interestingly enough, since 1990, over 100 agencies in Minnesota have disbanded, consolidated, or contracted with the Sheriff's Department to provide law enforcement services. Now, on the opposite side of the blue sheet is some information about the impact of the governor's recommendations. First of all, as part of the overview, the Post Board is funded by a special revenue account from a surcharge collected on criminal and traffic offenses. The surcharge generates over $18 million annually. 357.021 directs that 39% of the proceeds go to the Post Board, 60% to the general fund, 1% goes to DNR. However, in 04 and 05, the Post Board was allocated 22%, or just under the $4 million. The general fund was $14 million. Now, the governor, we requested the governor include 2 items in his recommendations: reimbursement to local units of government for the per-officer share, as well as an increase in our operating budget. Well, we're batting 500. We got 1 of the 2. Item number 1 is increased reimbursements to local units of government for continuing education. The governor agreed and recommended to increase from $358 to $455 per officer as a result of an additional fee to reinstate driver's licenses in non-DWI-related instances. We're grateful that the governor recognized the need for more training dollars, and we're very happy about that. The impact of that funding level is that agencies across the state will continue to be reimbursed from 1/4 to 1/3 of the actual training costs of their officers. The second item that we requested, if not successful, was an increase to our Post Board's general operating budget. The result is we're going to be losing staff again in 06 and 07. In 2001, we had 14.5 FTEs. That was actually 15 people, but one worked part-time. We're down to 13, and it looks like we'll drop to 12 and 11 over the coming years. The impact of a staff reduction for us, although we will absorb all the required duties and responsibilities by staff, we'd hope to provide even greater service to the law enforcement community, the colleges, and so forth, through a technology upgrade to process licenses, applications, and fees online. Our constituents have been asking us to provide those services for years on an online basis. We would increase our on-site compliance reviews to law enforcement agencies across the state. Currently, we visit 10% of the law enforcement agencies, or about 50, every year, checking policy, training records, etc. We would like to do more visits to the 21 colleges and universities to ensure that they're in compliance with the learning objectives that we set forth for law enforcement. More staff would shorten the times to process complaints against officers and agencies, and those complaints can come anywhere from citizens to other police officers to the Attorney General's office. We would offer our license exams more often. Right now we seat a lot of people in rooms at one time. We'd like to be able to spread that out a bit. And we'd also like to expand our board and committee membership meetings although in statute it's required that we have them six times a year, we, by dollars, we're down to four, and it would shorten our membership agendas, or the meeting agendas. So, Mr. Chair, that was as brief as I could be. I would be happy to ask or answer any questions.
Mr. Melton, you produced this for us, I believe.
Yes, sir.
In your under your history portion, you refer to operating costs such as rent and utilities have continued to escalate. You also indicate attorney general's fees have continued to escalate. What is the attorney general charging you a fee for, and what is it, that amount, and the reason for the escalation, if you know?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we contract with the attorney generals for legal assistance. It depends on who shows up as to how much the hourly rate is, from the attorneys to support staff and paralegals and so forth. We get itemized lists on a monthly basis. We dedicated $25,000 a year to that expenditure, although we're going to certainly exceed that this year because of the number of complaints we've had, the number of complaints that have gone on to administrative law hearings, a number of other issues have sent that cost up considerably. But the dollar figures, I'd have to look at the person who's actually doing the work.
So that's about 3% of your budget?
Of the operating budget, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Additional questions from anyone? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Milton, were you allowed to give a pitch to the governor's office about your budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, we met with the governor's staff, Chuck Nuremberg, and we laid out the history, the current conditions, and our hopes and dreams for the future.
Mr. Chair, I'm confused. We've got an increase and a decrease for the train, which will have an impact on property taxes across the state because local communities have to get their law enforcement officers trained, and they're paying more of the cost. And then we have this increase in the fee that's going into the general fund. And then we have this agency doing more training, doing more things, and we're expecting them, if we accept this budget, they're going to have two less people to carry out their mission. I just don't understand how it can be done, and yet more money from the post fund is going to the general fund. I don't get it. Mr. Melton, can you respond?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Melton, do that. And in the context of that response, you might want to revisit the reference to increased reimbursements to local units of government. So would you go ahead and answer her question, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, thank you for the question. I'm not sure there was a question in there that was more of a statement, but yes, we are going to do more with less. But the governor did recommend an increase in the training per officer. It doesn't come from the special revenue account. It comes from another funding source on the increase to the fee for driver's license reinstatement. But the net result is that officers will get, on a per officer share, about $93 more per officer for that training. And that money, by the way, goes to the agency, not to the officer individually.
But Mr. Chair,
that was in Murphy.
We know that from this blue sheet, we used to get $477. They used to get $477 for each officer to be trained, and now they're only going to get $455 per officer trained. So we still haven't made up the deficit in training. Am I correct? Does it only cost $455 per officer to be trained? Or am I all reading this wrong?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Melton?
And Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, the $477 figure was actually a figure from 1989, so it's been a long time. No, the fee to cover peace officer training varies across the state, depending on the expense of their training, how far they have to go for training, and so forth. We estimate that the actual training costs of officers on an average across the state to do the mandated training for use of force, emergency vehicle operations, pursuit training may run as high as $1,600 an officer, and that's an average. It could be more in certain areas and less in certain areas, depending on if the agency uses in-house staff or has to contract out for that training. So we figure the reimbursement now covers roughly between one-fourth and one-third of actual training costs.
And then who pays the rest?
Mr. Melton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it would have to be the local unit of government, the city, the county, or the state agency.
And that comes out of property
tax? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Anything further?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Melton, what are you going to do? You're going to do more with less, you said. You're going to have two less people in your office if we accept this budget. How many people will you have totally then?
Mr. Melton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, currently we have 13 staff members. We would either be down to 11, or we'd get by with 12 if that one person is me.
I doubt that, Mr. Melton. But I just don't see how a small office like that, that's doing as much as they can with all areas of government, in this state can get by with that much less, especially when we're increasing the amount of money that has to be paid to the general fund. I just don't get it. And so I bet you're going to hear from me more on this later, Mr. Chair, when we're putting the budget together.
That would be fine. Anything further at this time? Mr. Melton, thank
you. Quiet time now, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Melton, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
We're going to move along to the Board of Public Defense. Give us a second all to get readjusted here, if you will. I think we're ready. Go ahead, why don't you?
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Kevin Kyer. I'm the Chief Administrator for the Board of Public Defense. You're being given two handouts. One is a letter from the County Attorneys Association supporting the Board's budget request. The second one is a handout on the Board's budget request and also has some information in there on the governor's budget recommendations. We are in the somewhat unique position of being a judicial branch agency, and being able to present our request directly to the legislature. And I know, Mr. Chairman, that we're short of time, so I'm going to speed this up as much as I can and leave as much time for questions. Beginning on page two, just a little background I thought would be helpful is the public defender system is the largest user of the court system. We provide services in every courthouse in the state, and outside factors control the caseload. It's not something that we control. As we talked about earlier this year, there are several court cases, including the most recent one and the biggest one, Zubiak v. Mott, which basically says that public defenders cannot refuse cases once they're assigned, no matter what their caseload. And at the same time, we have ethical obligations that our attorneys are held to, just like any other lawyer is. As I mentioned earlier this year also, about 60% of our folks are part-time. So they're on the side, they're running their private law practice as well as providing public defender services. Mr. Chairman and members, beginning on page 3 is a summary of the individual requests of the board. Page 3 and 4 gives the comparison of those budget requests with what the governor recommended, and we're very appreciative of the governor's budget recommendation. We think it's a good start. You know, obviously there were some real difficult financial constraints that he was under, that you all are under, but it is for us very enlightening to know that the governor actually has a very big initiative, obviously, on meth and sex offenders, but also recognized in the budget that there are costs to all pieces of the criminal justice system. You heard from the folks at Public Safety. You're going to hear from the courts next week. I'm sure you're going to be hearing from corrections probably next week. And as they say, he's kind of put the money out there and put the money where his thoughts are, where the request is. So, Mr. Chairman, those budget requests of the governor's can be found on page 3, 4, and 5 of your book, the individual requests. If I might, just to start with the first budget request of the board was the public defender viability. It's on page 12 of your budget book. It really is a compiling of five different requests into one that all are an attempt to keep our public defender system viable. The first piece is the filling of 20 attorney positions. Right now we have, or as of July 1st, we'll have 20 attorney positions that we will not be able to fill or to continue to fill. Those are being funded right now on one-time money, either through keeping those positions vacant last year when we didn't know what was going to happen with the budget, or delaying the hiring of additional staff or the staff that we have now, and through that salary savings, trying to keep those 20 lawyers on. Secondly, we have part-time public defenders who I know a number of you know these folks, they're in your local communities, who are putting in this last year 29,000 additional hours beyond what they've agreed to put in. They do it because they like the work. They do it obviously because they're dedicated people. And you know, when you ask somebody to put in 50 or 100 extra hours a year, they do it. Again, they do it because they like it. They do it because they're dedicated to it. You ask them to start putting in 150 and 200 hours a year, an extra month worth of work or thereabouts, it gets difficult. And it gets difficult for them to continue any kind of a semblance of a private practice in the face of those increasing demands. This request would be to hire some additional staff to try to relieve them of those 29,000 additional hours. Mr. Chairman, the third piece of that is the reduction of caseloads. Right now, our caseloads are running at about 825 case units per full-time equivalent lawyer. And there's a graph on page 8 that shows where we are and where we'd like to try to get to compared to our caseload standards. The case unit, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is the equivalent of a misdemeanor. And statewide, we're handling right now, on average, about 825. The ABA standards and our own weighted caseload standard is about 400. We're asking to get down to about 715. We understand that the funding isn't there to do the entire caseload standards, but to at least start making some progress in this area. Mr. Chairman, the fourth piece of that is the personnel costs. This is represents a 4% increase on the personnel costs. This is the Department of Finance's projection over the next 2 years of where they think the personnel costs are going to go. Obviously a big ticket item. And lastly on this one, Mr. Chairman, is a minimal request of $55,000 a year for our public defense corporations. We've talked to a number of you about our corporations. They have about 5,000 cases a year that otherwise would be public defense cases, and it's imperative to us that those folks keep functioning and keep those cases, frankly, out of the public defender system, because then we can't afford that additional burden. The other thing I might mention about those corporations is that they raise about a dollar in private sector money for every dollar in state money that they get. Chairman, I have one illustration. If you look on page 7, when we talk about caseloads, one of the things we had one of our defenders in Brainerd do was take a picture of her cases. This represents the cases that this woman picked up, Jennifer Cummings, on Friday, October 15th of last year. So when she walked into court that day with her addition, with her public defender files, she picked up that whole batch of files right there. There's another picture that we did put in here that had the whole week that was literally scattered across her entire desk. Mr. Chairman, on page 9, in your handout and on page 10 of your budget book is a request for our appellate office. I don't think it's any great secret that between sex offender cases, the end of confinement review hearings, and the Blakely cases, that we have a problem there. We are asking for 3 new lawyers in that office, along with some one-time money to get through those Blakely cases. We've had 175 of those Blakely cases between, I think it was probably June and December. We're expecting somewhere around 300 or 400, and we've had to pull 2 lawyers and a law clerk off of our regular appellate work to handle those cases. Those sex offender end of confinement review hearings, as you all know, are going up. They went up 60% this last year. Our appellate files opened went up 27% this year, last year. Our parole revocation hearings went up 17%. I think I showed you the graph last time we were together that showed that tracked the caseloads in that office almost correspond directly to the number of inmates that are in the correctional facilities, and I don't think it's any. I don't have to tell you about the increase in the number of inmates over the last several years. Mr. Chairman, on page 10, you have a graph that shows just what we're talking about there in terms of the increase in the appellate cases. On both the trial level and the appellate level, we know we're not the most popular group in town, but on the other hand, if we don't have a well-funded or at least adequately funded public defender system, we have court slowdowns, we have court shutdowns, we have resolution of cases that are delayed, quality control of the criminal justice system is compromised. Nobody wants victims and witnesses and police officers and everybody else in the court system standing around waiting for public defenders. We're not interested in it. You folks certainly aren't interested in it. But that's literally what's going on right now. A couple of your former colleagues who were police officers mentioned the same thing. They have no interest in pulling out case files that are a year or 18 months old because of the delays in the criminal justice system. So that's kind of our pitch in terms of the trial level and the appellate level on the caseload and the public defender viability. On page 12 in your handout and on page 14 of your budget book is a request for a trial team and a DNA team. I think I've talked to most of you about this. Generally what happens in big sex offender cases, in homicide cases, and now we're seeing in meth cases, we have 2 attorney generals that come out and prosecute those cases. A lot of times it's one lowly public defender who's got that big group of files that you see on that page that not only has to try that case, but also has to keep the regular court calendar running. Oftentimes a retired judge is brought in to either hear that case or to run the regular court calendar. And so we're kind of the one piece that's holding up the system, if you will. This system, this request, we really believe will increase the efficiency of the court system by keeping those court calendars running. Give some relief to our part-time public defenders out there. I don't have to tell you, those of you sitting around the table, about the meth epidemic. You see that every day and talk to all of your local officials about that. It also would provide us with some minimal resources in DNA analysis and getting some folks trained in DNA analysis. You heard a little bit about that from the folks at Public Safety. We have one full-time lawyer who is has some expertise in DNA analysis. We have one three-quarter-time public defender who also does it, but she also has private cases. And that's the extent of it. As we move into the future, there are going to be more and more of these cases that are going to be turning on DNA evidence. And this is one of those things that we think just kind of levels the playing field at least a little bit when you consider the resources that are available to the prosecution. Mr. Chairman, page 13 in your handout and page 8 on your budget book is a request for information systems. And I guess if it's, Mr. Chairman, if we've got the time, I'd like to have Bob Sikora come back down and just briefly talk about that because he's the expert on that.
Well, let's see if we have any questions on the information
you've got
to us right now. Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the increase that that the governor is recommending, you're not adding any FTEs. You're just hiring people back. Hiring for those empty positions.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Paymar, the governor's budget recommendation, it was in two pieces. One was a general caseload increase, which he provided to the courts to recognize some of the difficulties that we've been having and the court's been having. That's the $1,695,000 a year. If the Department of Finance's projections are correct on where salary and benefit increases will go over the next 2 years, we're looking at probably somewhere between $5 and $6 million a year, or for the biennium, I should say, in personnel cost increases. So there's not going to be a lot of room to be hiring new staff. If you drop down to the meth and sex offender request that the governor has, there clearly would be some room to be able to hire new staff, but it would be really based on the fact that we're going to have a tremendous amount of workload from those two bills.
Mr. Carr, why doesn't that reflect on the budget page, page one? In 07, an increase in FTEs. There's a... significant increase in 07 for sex and meth offender sentencing changes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, typically what governors have done in the past is to make recommendations to judicial branch agencies and have not designated those as individual items. I'm assuming that's what happened here, is that the recommendation was made without any corresponding full-time equivalency, no specific recommendation there.
One more question. Then on page 4 of the budget book, the sex and meth offenders, in 07, we have really a doubling from fiscal year 06, but then in 08 and 09, it's still at 7.6. Right. So are you anticipating that we're going to have fewer meth offenders and sex offenders in 08 and 09 because of these bills that we're passing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, I can't really, I will try to speak to that. It's not our budget recommendation. That's a governor's recommendation. Typically, the 2006, the first year of the biennium, is less to accommodate the fact that you're not going to hire everybody on July 1st. I mean, it's going to take some time to get up and running. Secondly is the out years typically have been a straight line projection in terms of what the cost of any new budget item is. And that's I'm assuming what the governor did here, but that's been typical of other budget requests that I've seen.
I have one final question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kramer.
Mr. Kier, it used to be when I was first on this committee that the public defense You used to come here and speak on policy issues and bills that we were proposing. Mr. Stewart used to come here, and you don't do it anymore. Is this because of cutbacks, or is this because of some kind of philosophical change with the board?
Yeah.
Mr. Geyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, we still do, and we kind of pick our battles now, and we try to do as much as we can, but there are some things that, you know, we know where the votes are and where they're not, and some things where we know we can have an impact on. You will be hearing from Mr. Stewart in the near future on sex offenders. He was a member of the Governor's Commission on Sex Offender Policy. You'll be hearing from him on that. We will be talking about meth and some other things as well. So,
thank you.
We haven't heard any bills yet, Representative Paymar, but I'm sure the first one, Kyra will get a special invitation. Come and chit-chat about it.
Thank you, Mr.
Kyra. You referenced the governor typically not suggesting where the money should go because it's your judicial branch agency. Would it be helpful to you and your office if this committee attempted to line item some certain dollar amounts to certain aspects of your tasks?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, it generally doesn't, only because the board ends up meeting in the spring and kind of figuring out, you know, there are specific guidelines in the statute that they have to follow in terms of, you know, divvying up the budget, whatever is whatever the legislature appropriates. So it typically hasn't been, and I know that for the most part you folks have kind of moved away from that, at least in the last couple of years have. So I guess that's a long answer to the question, but
in light of the time, I think we're going to bring our hearing to a close. I think more or less concluded your presentation.
Right.
If we have additional needs or if any member of the committee has any questions right now, please ask them. Otherwise, I do anticipate having you back in a week or so, specifically on a couple of issues that have come up since the last time we had a budget go around 2 years ago. I may want to discuss a little more of the court's opinion and direction, if any, contained in the opinion that struck the copay bill that we did a couple of years ago. So,
okay. Just
a heads up on that. I may have some questions to you as chairman within a day or two. Right now, I don't have any specifics, but that's one general area I'd like you back on. So, I may give you a half an hour next week sometime. So, if the committee has any questions on the budget, you've got a few days to think of them, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Kyer, I just have a question on page 10 of this the handout that you gave us.
Mm-hmm.
It says parole violations. Should that not be probation, or I guess I don't understand?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Soderstrom, those are the parole violations that our appellate office does. The probation violations are handled on the trial level, and we certainly can get you those numbers if you'd like. So,
I didn't hear the full question.
Mr. Chairman, they were asking about the parole violations on page 10 of the handout. The parole violations are handled by the appellate office.
Of your office?
Yes, yes. And as opposed to the probation violations.
Does the Gideon case require you all to do parole violations?
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't know if it's Gideon, but Mr. Stewart's here. If you want him to come down, otherwise we can certainly follow up with you afterward in light of the time.
I'm done for now.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one quick one. It's right at the end. You also have a budget request in for the child protection cases.
Yes.
And I really would encourage you to take a look at that. This is one area that's not a mandated service that we are doing. We put this in. We put no priority on any of these budget requests when we put them into the governor. But it is an area that we are drowning in right now. We get multiple appointments, and I know I've talked to a number of you about this. But it is a very difficult area for us. And it is the one area where you know, we have some discretion about, you know, not doing those cases. So.
Specifically on that point, our state statutes do not require you to take those cases, do we?
Mr. Chairman, they do not. It's a county responsibility under Minnesota Statutes 260C.
And the caseload, how many cases per year does that represent?
Mr. Chairman, without looking at it, I think it's somewhere around 8,400 cases a year right now.
Are there multiple PDs assigned to any one particular case?
Mr. Chairman, that the 8,400 represents the public defender appointments, but typically we have, on average, about 1.7 lawyers per CHIPS case.
And
so we have multiple defendants all the time, multiple parties.
9,000 cases would represent how many person hours? Or
boy.
What's the caseload per year for a PD? Didn't you tell us that number earlier?
Mr. Chairman, about
825
case units.
Per year.
Yeah. Statewide, outside of Hennepin County, and again, I mention that only because Hennepin County, we have a cost-sharing arrangement with Hennepin County. So, but outside of Hennepin County, we probably have 40 lawyers, 40 full-time equivalents that do this work around the state. Now, obviously, folks, especially the part-timers, do a mix of cases. But
so at 825 cases per lawyer per year with 9,000 cases, that's 11 lawyers per year that you could save or redirect elsewhere.
If you
walked away from those cases.
Mr. Chairman and members, it is a significant number of, if you break it down to the case units, which is what we kind of the least common denominator, it is a significant number of case units. And frankly, even if the governor's budget recommendation passes, we would be probably looking at having to, if not lay off staff, at least, you know, through attrition, lose some positions. So,
Mr. Carter, thank you for coming. It's always a pleasure.
We'll
see you in a few days or weeks.
Okay.
Meeting is adjourned.